Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Girl Between by Lisa Stromer, narrated by Catherine Kellgren. Oscarstrand, 1893. 1. Blank Canvas. The greatest brightness, short of dazzling, acts near the greatest darkness. Theory of Colours, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. I hid inside the painting, hoping she wouldn't see what I'd become. Sometimes it still worked. If I closed my eyes and thought of strawberries, I could feel the threads of the ripped dress tickling my bare shoulder while Herr Heyerdahl's brush swept the palette and daubed the canvas. When I concentrated hard, I could make my face sullen yet obedient, as it was when he captured it. I could even feel the fine stems of the jasmine laced through my fingers like cobwebs, my other hand trembling with fatigue, gripping the bowl. That itch on my shoulder that I couldn't scratch. Must not move, must not talk, must keep still. During the winter, when there were no guests, she saw me as I had been then, 10 years old, simple and useful. But at 16 it was getting harder to be the strawberry girl. The moniker had replaced me, hidden me firmly behind it. From the moment the painting was finished and displayed at the Grand Hotel for all the Christiania guests to admire, my title was set like lacquer. As a child, I wore the label with enforced pride. Now it wore me, but the veneer was cracking and peeling like old paint. Mother was on her knees at the stove, swishing her rag in the pail as if bathing a small child. When she saw me coming, she wrung it out with a forceful twist, as though the thing had tried to talk back to her. "Move, Johanna!" she spat. "Why are you dragging your feet when there's so much work to be done? It's the start of the season, for heaven's sake. The Heyerdahls are arriving this afternoon. You know how he likes the cottage to be light and airy, free from..." Her voice rose and she paused, awaiting my answer. "Free from..." "Clutter," I said through clenched teeth. "You can lose that attitude, my girl." Her sleeves were already rolled to the elbow, but she pushed them higher as if to make a point. "He's bringing canvases and paints, all his supplies. He can't be working if it's not free from clutter in here." Hans Heyerdahl couldn't care less about that sort of thing. He was a painter. He made more clutter than the four of us ever did. I drew a shape on the wall with my finger.
"Well, don't just stand there," she said. "I read you the letter, didn't I? Out loud."
"Yes, Mother. First the boat, then the wagon. We've to send Father and Andreas to fetch them."
"So we need to get a move on."
She brushed past me and stretched to the high shelf, then slammed a wooden bowl down onto the stove.
"Find some fruit, will you?" she said. "Fill the bowl. Quickly! I need you back here to sweep the floors and air the sheets."
"It's still early," I said. "I won't be able to pick that many strawberries for a few weeks yet."
"I said lose that attitude. Go on, lose it out there in the woods." She clapped her hands in front of my face. "And if that Thomas comes running after you, you tell him you're not interested in that kind of attention. Do you hear me?"
"Yes, Mother."
"And don't dawdle near the other painter's house, the sinful man. Fru Jürgensen said he arrived last night. He's brought his evil back again. That man's not right." She prodded at her own temple. "Not like our Herr Heyerdahl, not right in the head. You keep walking past the hut. Don't even look in the garden. You know he leaves those dreadful pictures outside to dry. Sinful, that's what they are. He hangs his depravity in full view like he's proud of it. You keep your head down, Johanna Lien. Think of this family's name. Think of your reputation. Now go find some fruit for the Heyerdahls. She planted the bowl in my hand and shooed me from the house, muttering about my bare feet and straggly hair as I dashed out into the bright morning sun. I left her grumbling amid the mess of her own words. The strawberries would still be buds, hard and reluctant like small white fists. Nature had mixed her colours, but not yet brought them to her canvas. Fruits and flowers needed light and warmth before they could blossom, but Mother seemed to think I could force them to ripen as if by magic, because I was the strawberry girl. For her, the title had little to do with my occupation and more to do with the painting. It was currency, the bridge that linked us to the upper classes, the rich holiday-makers from Christiania, Herr Heyerdahl's patrons who flocked to Oskarstrand every summer. It was an accurate portrait of me as I was then. The blues and yellows merged to form a tatty little girl in a scruffy dress whose folds and crevices were darkened by shadow. The flash of skin at the torn sleeve made my shoulder look clean, although I was always covered in grazes from my wild ramblings in the forest. I didn't see how the painting could possibly have united us with the ladies who paraded around town in their fine white dresses and hats and ribbons. But Herr Heyerdahl stayed in our cottage. That meant something, didn't it? The painting set us apart. This collection of shapes, contours, tone and light seemed to transform me into a princess in the eyes of the Christiania guests. To my mother, it was all the proof she needed that we were practically one of them. There was only one strawberry bush that could be ready. Perfectly located on a hill by a wall, it was easily accessible and bathed in sunlight even this early in the season. The only complication was that it happened to be in his garden. If Hans Heyerdahl was Mother's god, the sinful man was her devil. It was forbidden for Andreas and me to say his name. Even thinking about him was considered a betrayal. Mother didn't know about what he had given me, or the conversations I'd had with him, the times I'd met him in the forest. Neither distinguished nor successful, he was something of an oddity in the town. He was the summer neighbour the locals liked, but could not hope to understand. He was as poor as the rest of us, barely able to pay the rent for his hut, so poor that we didn't even bother to set the word Herr before his name, as though he wasn't a gentleman at all. His strange paintings did nothing to strengthen his reputation, and rumour liked to make him a madman and a drunk. Our upper-class guests from Christiania, with whom Mother was so keen to make her allegiance, shunned him completely. The ladies were advised to avert their eyes from the paintings and use their parasols to shield themselves from the vulgarity on open display. Out in the fresh air I dared myself to say his name, treading heavily to dampen the sound of my voice. Quietly at first, I whispered the two words that dripped with wickedness. I said his name out loud. Edvard Munch! Something snapped behind me as the name escaped my lips. Had I been cursed as I'd said it, so instantly condemned? I spun around to find Thomas sauntering out from behind a cluster of silver birches by the road. His open face beamed, and his dark brown eyes twinkled so brightly that even against the glare of the sun I could see exactly what was on his mind. "Johanna, wait," he said. "Where are you going?" "I've got to pick fruit for the Heyerdahls. Can I help?" I gestured for Thomas to join me without seeming too eager. My hand leaped to my shoulder, touched the fabric, smoothed out the seams of my blouse.
"How long have you got?"
he said, snatching the bowl from my hand. "Give me that!" I reached out, but he lifted it high above his head, stepping back toward the trees and inviting me closer. "Thomas, I don't have time for this. Not today. Give it back."
"All right, then," he said, lowering the bowl. "But at least come with me to the beach. A quick paddle won't do any harm, will it?"
He darted off, leaving me staring out to sea with a familiar longing swelling in my body. The vast expanse of water dominated my life. It always entranced me. The sheer scale of it was so infinite that I barely believed the fishermen's stories of what was out there where the fjord met the open sea. Punctuated only by the island of Bastøy and the ships and sailboats that passed our bay, the endless blue could be seen from every part of Åsgårdstrand, a town that seemed to have been carved into the steep hill as an act of defiance by the people who belonged to the fjord. Thomas was already running ahead of me. I was drawn to the water and needed no further invitation. Our hill was steep and the gradient unforgiving, so it was difficult to walk down it slowly. I reeled after him down Nygårdsgaten until it levelled out at the bottom. We passed the fishermen's huts that would house us for the summer while the Heyerdahls stayed at our cottage. I averted my eyes through force of habit when we came to the little mustard hut at the end, the one Munk was renting from Fru Jürgensen. Breaking into a sprint, we tore down Havnegata, where the cobbles spread out like fans beneath us, leading to the pier and the bathing house on the rocky side of the coast, where the water coursed in from the fjord. My chest opened with relief, and I inhaled the freedom of the fresh sea air. Rolling his trousers to his knees, Thomas waded out into the water. I hitched up my skirt and petticoat. Soon the silt was filling the spaces between my toes. Out on the sea, the sailboats drifted by, moving quietly with the tides as if in a daydream. The beach was still. A few young girls were playing with stones at the water's edge under the watchful eye of their mother, perched on a rock beneath a parasol. Further along, an old fisherman was scrubbing at the base of his upturned boat, while a bearded man with a rope stood behind him, tying knots. They paid us no attention, and I was glad of it.
"Come on, up to your knees," Thomas said, striding out ahead of me. "I dare you."
I set my bowl down on a stone and followed him, splashing in the cool water as it rose above my ankles. He was heading for a group of rocks that jutted out from the surface, the place where I used to sit as a girl and pretend I was a mermaid. "I can't get that far out today," I shouted, thinking about the book in my front pocket. "Not without my bathing clothes."
"Spoil sport," he said.
He cupped his hands and scooped up water, then blew it through his fingers, spraying fountains all around me. "Thomas!" I shrieked. If it hadn't been for the book, I would have drenched him. Instead, I sploshed away, searching for treasures. But soon he was behind me, slipping his arms around my waist and pressing his chest against my back.
"Look," he said, pointing to a spot on the horizon. "One day I'll take you out there, Johanna."
I felt his breath against my ear, and my stomach fluttered, then tightened as his lips dusted my skin, and he began telling the story he liked to recite.
"I'll take you away from here on an adventure," he said, lowering his mouth to my neck. "I'll be the skipper on a big ship."
"And where will you take me?"
I said, as if I didn't know. "We'll head out to sea, to Denmark, then down to France and to Egypt. We'll find riches and return decked in jewels, and they'll call us the King and Queen of Åsgårdstrand."
"You sound like Peer Gynt," I said, and look where his seafaring got him.
At least he was rich, Thomas said, in the end.
I wriggled out of his arms and turned to face him. No, he was selfish and lost his riches.
He shrugged. You will come with me, though, one day, won't you, Johanna? He said, his confidence leaking like water from a broken bucket.
Will I?
Don't you want to see what's out there?
He said, taking my hands in his.
To explore?
A low horn sounded out on the fjord, and I turned around to see the Jarlsberg sailing in toward the pier, its flags flapping in the wind to announce its arrival. I picked up my skirt and shook out the soaked hem as I ran back to the beach in search of my bowl.
Wait! Thomas shouted. Johanna, come back!
I don't have time, I said.
But wait, Johanna, stop!
I was already hurrying away.
There's a dance tonight at the Grand Hotel, he shouted. You will come, won't you?
Maybe, I called. Maybe, if my mother hasn't killed me by then. I ran across the beach over rocks and clumps of seaweed. My feet knew the way and easily found the smooth tracks that years of bathers had padded away. I grabbed my bowl and hurried along the shoreline past the Grand Hotel and onto the path that led to Fuchstad Forest. Munk's house was adjacent to the path and spanned a steep hill with the house at the top and the path at the bottom. The fruit trees and bushes on the other side of the fence beckoned me with outstretched arms. The fence had never stopped me before. I balanced my bowl on the post and lifted my skirt to my knees, scanning the neighbouring windows for witnesses to my crime. I saw and heard nothing but the screeching gulls circling above me. My feet sank into the wire and I wobbled as it bent to carry my weight. My skirt tore, snagging on a stray splinter as I jumped over. Avoiding the nettles, I landed in the long grass and set to work searching the bushes for fruit. I kicked away twigs and brushed aside the dainty white flowers and serrated leaves of the strawberry bush, but found nothing. Dropping to my knees, I crawled along the ground, checking the undergrowth. I plunged my arms into the tangle of the hedge, scratching my fingers and forearms until welts appeared on my skin. Oh, curse it! I said, damned Heyerdahls. My face was buried in the bushes.
You're wasting your time.
The voice flung open a door in my memory. I released the leaves in my hand and froze as a shiver travelled the length of my spine. My arms stung as I turned to find Munk looking down at me. He was wearing a dark jacket that hung from him as though he might have inherited it from an older brother. A grey vest held him in place. He had a shapely, sensuous mouth, which I felt guilty for noticing. The top lip, curving and full, was framed by a light moustache. The bottom lip was plump, almost petted, like a child's. He had a strong jawline and pale blue, doleful eyes that sang with sadness. It struck me that the sadness was not a fleeting emotion, but something that inhabited him permanently like an anchor.
"Johanna," he said, half smiling.
"Yes, it's me." I straightened my torn skirt. "Mother wanted me to find fruit for the Heyerdahls."
"My sister and I collected the ripe ones this morning," he said. "Come up to the house."
I wanted to refuse him. Mother would skin me alive if she knew I had been caught trying to steal strawberries, let alone from him. But I could not return empty-handed, and although Munk's face was serious, his eyes were kind.
"We can't let Hans go without now, can we?" he said, fetching my bowl from the fence.
He was carrying a beige sketchbook. The edges of it were frayed, and the cover was marked with scribbles and coffee stains. He tucked it under his arm and turned to go up the hill. I walked in his footsteps, my dirty feet stepping where his boots flattened the grass.
When I raised my head at the brow of the hill, I immediately noticed the paintings. Two large canvases, almost as tall as me, loomed in the near distance. Like bathers reclining in the sun, they were leaning against the wall of the Burgundy outbuilding, his temporary studio. The pictures were so compelling I couldn't help but look. One was of a lady, a dark figure, staring mournfully at what looked like her own shadow. She was so utterly desolate that my chest tightened and a wave of sadness invaded my throat. The other painting was of a lush scene where a man and a woman were resting by a tree. The woman was wearing a light blue apron and holding a bowl of red berries that ignited my curiosity and somehow intensified my sadness. I wanted to reach out and touch the couple. They seemed wounded. When we reached the hut, Munk called out to his sister,
"Inger, Johanna's looking for strawberries."
I hovered outside while he climbed the steps to the back door. Returning to the couple in the painting, I saw that the woman holding the berries was with child, her swelling belly visible above the bowl. They were cherries, and the tree was ripe, like her, abundant and in its prime. But the man was tired, and his bones were heavy. He was slumped on a tree stump with a walking cane resting by his side. At the centre of the painting, the circle from a freshly cut bough blemished the tree trunk and robbed them both of their happiness.
"Hello,"
Inger said, appearing in the open doorway. I tugged my gaze from the pictures and looked at her with a fixed smile. She was dressed in black from head to toe, with the exception of a white collar that frilled around her neck. Her dark brown hair was scraped into a severe bun at the back of her head.
"We collected them this morning," she said, presenting me with the bowl as though she owed me the fruit. "There's plenty."
I looked at the small collection of strawberries, knowing they were everything they had. Inger's features were similar to Munk's, although her expression was more open than his, and her eyes were darker and wider. In a way, she resembled the woman on the canvas, tormented by her own shadow.
"It's for the Heyerdahls,"
I said guiltily.
"Yes, I saw the boats come in from up here. We have a splendid view," said Inger, smiling as she handed me the bowl.
"You're the strawberry girl, aren't you? You've grown since last summer." Munk emerged again from the house.
"Subjects in paintings grow and change, Inger, like life. They are life. They change with our moods and the time of the day, different each time we look at them."
I watched him as he talked, waving his hands, carving pictures into the air.
"How are your own paintings coming along, Johanna?"
he said.
"Oh, they're just sketches," I said. "I don't have paints. Mother would consider them dirty. Although I do read the book you gave me every day."
"Why don't you come back again tomorrow?" he said. "You can have some of my paints. I'm going to start mixing them from..."
His soft voice drifted away and his hands moved in circles as if completing his sentence.
"Mother won't allow it," I said.
"She doesn't have to know, does she?"
he said, looking pointedly at the strawberries in my hands.
"I suppose not."
"Then tomorrow it is," he said. "I'll set aside a canvas for you."
The sun branded my back as I ran up Nygårdsgatan and reminded me how late I was. With my ripped skirt and grimy arms, I was like a sketch that had been crumpled and cast away, an idea that had been scribbled out, but all I could think about was tomorrow. Tomorrow I would see him again. Tomorrow I would paint.
Mother's friend, Fru Berg, was at our gate when I rounded the top of the hill. Plump and puffy-cheeked, she looked as tired from coming a few paces down the hill as I was from having run up the whole of it. Her substantial bosom was hanging over the fence, which strained to prop her up for her daily gossip with my mother.
I slowed to a walk.
"Goodness, Joanna, look at you,"
Fru Berg said, staring at my dress and my mucky feet.
"Have you been in a war?"
She was a washerwoman, and, like my mother, was obsessed with starched collars and pristine skirts. Smears and stains on clothes were the marks that tainted a person's character. To Fru Berg, I must have been a lost cause. Mother came flying from the kitchen. She had changed into her best pinstriped skirt and the white blouse she saved for church. Her slight body, already tense, tightened further when she saw me.
"Where've you been, Joanna? It's past 12. They'll be here any minute. I've had to do the floors and sheets myself."
She glanced at the tear in my skirt.
"How did you... Look at the state of you,"
she said, her voice high-pitched and resentful. "You wanted a full bowl," I said. Her lips pressed together and her cheeks ballooned as though filling with steam. If we had been alone, she would have slapped me hard, but Fru Berg's beady eyes deflated her rage.
"You see, Benedicta," she said, "this is why she needs a job. She runs around looking like an urchin all summer. She sells fruit, yes, but we'll get more out of her as a housemaid."
"What do you mean?" I said.
"Fru Berg and I have found you a job. You are to be a housemaid for Admiral Elan and his family in Bore."
"But I pick strawberries," I said incredulously.
"And you'll continue to pick your fruit. You can do that in your spare time. But from Monday to Saturday, you will be a housemaid. You start tomorrow."
2. Primer. In the process of colouring, the preparation merely washed, as it were, underneath, was always effective. Theory of Colours, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. I was washing my feet at the water pump when they arrived. A clop of hooves echoed meekly on the dusty road, and I looked up to see a dappled pony straining against the weight of a heavily loaded cart. The horse nodded its head as though trying to draw strength from its neck muscles, where perspiration beaded and coated its skin. My father looked out of place on the wagon. He was a sailmaker and never used a cart or a horse. He didn't like the way they jiggled his bones and preferred the gentle rock of the sea. The wagon was borrowed from father's friend, Svein Carlson, but it was my brother Andreas who was adept with the reins. He was sitting in the middle, bolstered by father and Herr Heyerdahl. Easing in the fatigued pony, he brought them to a standstill. Mother had forced Andreas into his Sunday best, and he looked stiff in his black vest and white shirt. Even his cap had been cleaned.
"Well done, boy,"
Herr Heyerdahl's voice boomed as he patted Andreas on the knee. 13 and shy to the point of silence, Andreas barely spoke at all. He hopped down from the wagon with his chin pressed into his neck and tied the horse's reins to our fence. Herr Heyerdahl had become rounder in the last year. The buttons on his vest were challenged by his protruding belly, which he clasped as he huffed to the ground. His beard and moustache were longer and tapered to a neat point below his chin. Father was already at the back of the wagon assisting Fru Heyerdahl, a prim lady in a flowery bonnet. She was squashed between trunks and large canvases that looked as though they could topple and crush her at any moment. Their two children, Sigri and Hans, jumped from the wagon and flew around the garden like birds freed from a cage. Mother trotted across to greet her guests.
"Welcome back to Oskarstrand," she said in a sugary voice. I pushed the handle of the water pump with renewed force to drown out her platitudes.
"Sara, what a pleasure,"
Herr Heyerdahl was saying.
"Halvor tells me you've been working hard for us again. You shouldn't go to such trouble.
Oh, it's no trouble at all, Mother gushed. I hope you'll find everything to your liking.
While she continued to fuss, I noticed Herr Heyerdahl's attention begin to slip.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?